Welcome to It Takes Imagination, where we explore creativity and big ideas in content marketing. The second member of our podcast family offers expert insights, creative solutions, and practical smarts from the content pros who live and make content marketing every day, our team here at Imagination. Along the way, we get help from two staples of our HQ in Chicago, microbrews for our interview guests, and laughs from an improv alum of Second City. We cover the topics that matter most to content marketers, in your ears, and on the go. I'm Kim Cavanis, your host and Chief Content Officer of Imagination. Today we're talking about one of everyone's favorite topics, creativity, specifically creative leadership. How do you bring out the best in a creative team? From knowing when it's the right idea, to the right brainstorm approach, to the best way to say yes and no. We'll get insight from Steve Weins, founder and top dog of Microsoft Story Labs, plus our friend Chad Kunkel, a Second City alum who lives through the creative process every day. I've been part of creative teams as long as I can remember, and for a big chunk of my life, I've been leading those teams of editors, art directors, photographers, video pros, you name it. It's really the world's best job, but it comes with its own big fat challenges, including how can those of us charged with leading content teams push for creativity as hard as we can? How do we say no, gently, to the bad, and yes to the good, in a way that doesn't kill the spirits of naturally super creative, spirited people who are often a bit sensitive? And how do we raise the level of quality and creativity in all that we do? How do we know when the team gets to the right great idea? That's why we're here today talking about the right and wrong ways to lead for creativity. My partner in podcasting and VP of content, Chris Blos, is here to provide his perspective. Hey, Chris.
Hello. Happy to be here. I'm very curious, as you've kind of gone through your career, how has your attitude toward creative leadership changed over the years?
You know, as I think back, I think that I used to think to be a leader, you had to be smart and always have the right answer because they were looking at you, and to get their respect, you had to be definitive. And I think I ask a lot more questions now. I don't feel that pressure to be right. I feel my job is more to shepherd them and help them get to the right solutions. I think another thing that's changed is that I used to think more one-dimensionally. I try to start every creative brainstorm or problem-solving session thinking further down the line and helping teams see second or third level where that creative solution needs to get to. Finally, with time, I'm sure this is a lesson for most people, but I've learned to be more patient with others and with myself. I truly 100% used to believe in first thought, best thought, and I realized that's a fallacy. It's pretty much not true, and it's shocking what waiting even a couple of hours can do to improve the creativity of an idea or approach. The third idea at base level is pretty much always going to be best, better than the first idea you had. I didn't know any of these things when I first started leading creative teams. What about you, Chris?
I'm glad you brought up patience. I think that's something that I have to remind myself all the time, to be patient. And also think about the fact that there is no single creative type. Some people are on the fly thinkers and can just come up with ideas really quickly and kind of roll with that. Other people really want to go back and work through documentation and bullet points and really kind of analyze what it is that goes behind the idea. I'm a talker. I know that. A lot of other people are talkers too, but then you have people who are a little more quiet, and you want to make sure that you're getting the best ideas out of them and that they're not being overwhelmed by, you know, people like me who are likely to talk just to fill the space. Sean Ruddy, our video director, he's written about this, and I really like his advice of letting team members work on ideas outside of the actual brainstorm or even during the brainstorm, but on an individual basis, and then kind of bring those ideas back to the group, right? So it's not just everybody throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. It's really a more drawn out analytical process.
Yeah, I've been leading a lot of brainstorms recently within our own content team. I was bringing in our team in groups of 10 and asking them to say what's really working and what would they like to see differently. And what I tried this time that was different is I used a brainstorm technique somebody had told me about called Crazy 8. You basically take a piece of paper, fold it into 8 sections or draw lines so that they have it. And then you build in thoughtful time and you say, everyone take 15 minutes and quietly just jot down, you know, 8 things that come top of mind. You can capture it in whatever format's good for you, words, pictures, anything. And then they all scribble. At 15 minutes, I asked them to take a look at what they've written and pick their favorite one. And then we went around the table and they shared that. And what was amazing to me is that with the introverted people who might be more shy about sharing their ideas and might be holding back, they had the same airspace as the extroverted people who were used to rushing in and really clearly identifying their best idea. And the introverts were able to have these fully formed ideas that they felt great about sharing. And then the extroverts who are pretty comfortable at rushing forth with that first idea and thinking that's the one, they surprised themselves probably by having, you know, 8 entire ideas from which to choose, and were able to see what time and quietness can do to the quality of their idea. That was pretty successful. Anybody wants to see what this grid might look like, as I made up a template for us, we're happy to include that link in the show notes for this episode. And then the last thing I think I'll say is something that's not very natural for me, which is I love to say yes to things and help find solutions. And sometimes you just have to say no. And so I've learned over time that when you see that an idea is going off the rails and then it's not going to be tied to business goals, let's respect everyone's time. And I'll just try to redirect and say, this is not right. Good ideas, but not right. You know, let's shift it back to what we know is going to solve it. So as hard as it was for me to say just hard no, that's sometimes a really important part of the creative process.
Well, yeah, you should never compromise when it comes to quality.
Never. That's rule number one. In as collaborative a way as you can do it. But yes, never compromise. We're back for another stat segment, this time with senior editor Margaret Poe. What do you have for us?
Hey, Kim. So today I'm here with a stat about creativity and about how you get your work done, or kind of how it gets done. So it turns out that according to psychology research, about 20% of adults report they're chronic procrastinators. And that includes people like Aaron Sorkin, Frank Lloyd Wright, myself. Not that I put myself in their category. But anyway, the point is that a lot of really creative and prolific people are waiting right up until their deadline to finally do their work and finish it up. I found that interesting and kind of encouraging, too.
I think we all find that encouraging. I'm sure 20% is probably pretty low compared to how all of us feel.
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks, Margaret. Speaking of creativity and leadership, I'm so happy to have Steve Weens from Microsoft Story Labs here today. Steve is the founding managing editor, meaning he got Microsoft's content marketing efforts off the ground about 6 years ago. He's put forth a ton of groundbreaking creative and has a lot of insights and real life learned lessons to share about how you lead for maximum creativity very successfully. Steve, welcome. Let's crack open our local Chicago beers on both our ends of the line and get the conversation going.
Hey, Steve, how are you? Thanks for joining us in our beer and content segment of this episode, where we talk to content marketers we admire about your creative process. Our topic this episode is, how do you lead highly creative, talented individuals to come together and make consistently innovative content the way you do at Microsoft Story Labs?
Hey, Kim, thanks for having me. I'm Steve Weens. I'm the founding editor and creative director for Microsoft Story Labs here in Redmond, Washington. We've been around for just under 6 years now. So it sort of took shape with a specific story that we did called 88 Acres that was really our first and one that got a lot of attention. And it was all about a facilities engineer here at the company who really in his spare time and with a little bit of help created a smart building solution that let him monitor all of the energy use around Microsoft's campus, over 100 buildings here in Puget Sound, from one laptop. We thought that this was really a quite remarkable product that he had built for us in a homespun way. And so we wrote this story, 88 Acres, about the work that he had done. And the story took off to such a degree that that Daryl, the person who built it, he found himself with a large sales pipeline basically overnight of leads from folks who wanted to buy this innovative solution that he had built. And that was what Story Labs was born out of. And since then, you know, we've done a lot more long-form pieces, but we've also done animated videos, a podcast, virtual reality experiences, physical out-of-home experiences, really with the idea that we would tell our own story and what we thought was most interesting about what was going on here at Microsoft using the most interesting storytelling tools that we had available to us. You know, I mean, we really enjoy the work that we do here. And I think one of the things that that has helped is that we try to hold up the same bar for a story that we would do to a story that we would read or watch. We're really interested in the stories that we're trying to tell because, you know, candidly, if we're not interested, then other folks probably aren't going to be either. I think pounding the pavement and getting out there and learning what you can about what's happening is really key. And that's something I learned first as a reporter working for newspapers. That's where I am really grateful to have a diverse team that kind of comes from different backgrounds and has different ways of looking at things and maybe different disciplines that they come from or different creative expertise that they have. And, you know, sort of filtering all of that down leads to a much greater product than just what's in one individual's head. It's really a collaborative process. And that makes it a lot more fun too.
There's such joy and curiosity coming out of the solid journalism you're putting out. How do you use the data Microsoft generates in a way to elevate what you're doing, but at the same time not stifle creativity and lock you into a box of predictable stories and calls to action?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the beautiful things about working in digital storytelling is that you know a whole lot more about, you know, how people are consuming your content and what they think of it. But at the same time, you can't make a religion out of it because the data really will only get you so far. It can give you directionally some ideas about what's happening, but you're never going to go, as one of my colleagues always says, past a reasonable doubt in terms of the burden of proof. And so I think it requires you to look at a lot of different data sources and listen to what the data is saying and try to learn what you can without becoming obsessed with it or without, you know, doing the easy thing, which is really just to manage your success and how you measure it into a cell in a spreadsheet, because I think that's sort of the place where creativity dies.
You could probably tell dozens of first-class stories every day. As the boss of this team, it's one of your jobs to identify the right ideas to pursue. Saying yes is so important, but so is saying no, of course. How do you negotiate that divide, especially when you're not always sure when that okay, good idea might evolve into a truly great one?
I think to a certain degree, it's my job to filter out the noise and distill that into a set of stories or at least a storytelling agenda that we can work off of and to really start to concept against. So I think bringing together the right people and then marrying that up with sort of the knowledge that I have from keeping my ear to the ground and doing a lot of that legwork, I think that's a big piece of my role in sort of keeping folks focused and also letting them be free to do what they do creatively without having to worry about some of the other overhead.
So obviously you trust your people and you keep your ear to the ground and track great talent. Do you have your own secret formula for recognizing talent that's going to change your expectations about what's possible next for Microsoft Story Labs?
Yeah. You know, I think about this sometimes, and you know, there's sort of limits to this analogy, but I think of this in terms of hardware and software in a way where there's the creative capabilities, the know-how that someone already has, the ability to be a great photographer or an excellent web designer. But then there's also kind of software. This is something I really feel is learned. It's not something that you're born with, although some people might start out ahead in that way, but just knowing how to think creatively and be open through the creative process in terms of the core creative team, it's folks that have worked together for quite a long time. And that's maybe another piece, too, is that you start to develop relationships over time that last. And it doesn't have to be the same kinds of people that you would choose as friends, but there's a kind of creative brotherhood or sisterhood or whatever that kind of comes out of doing this kind of work together and doing it sometimes in circumstances where there's really high expectations to deliver. And that bond, I think, makes you a better creative team over time.
How is your leadership style today different than younger Steve, when you were still finding your way as a creative leader? Can you put your finger on one thing that's changed in the way you lead and manage creatives?
I would say the biggest thing that's changed for me is I'm a lot more comfortable with delegating. I think I've learned to trust folks a lot more over time. And I've learned that if you really trust your team and you empower them completely, you will get to a much better place creatively than if you try to control everything and try to be the guiding hand behind everything. And if folks feel like you're always looking over their shoulder, or that, you know, everything is going to be judged through the filter of one particular person's creative vision, you will only get so far and you'll only be able to create so much. But if you empower the folks on your team to really grow and to really put forth their best work in an environment where they know that the integrity of it is going to remain, then, you know, you'll end up with something that maybe is different than what you would have done on your own. But that's really the point, right? It ends up being better in the end.
Yes, exactly. I've learned that lesson the hard way. It's true. So often, by giving up control up front, you actually gain control over the end product and create final work that's more wise, nuanced, and powerful. Do you guys brainstorm together, or is it more individual people on your team having a great idea and then coming together to make it stronger?
You know, brainstorming is crucial to what we do. It's one of the parts of the job that I enjoy the most. And I think we really do two kinds of brainstorms here, and one of them is a focused brainstorm that's really putting our heads against a brief that we have, or, you know, we have an idea of a story that we want to tell, but we're not sure what the format is, and we really do try to start from a story and then move on to the actual tactics. I'm lucky to work with a lot of creative folks, and maybe this is because I'm a bit of an introverted person by nature, but I sometimes find that my best idea comes after I've sort of absorbed the creative possibilities in a general way, you know, batted around ideas with some folks. You think really deeply about a problem or about an opportunity and, you know, really go deep on it and then let your subconscious take over. And that can be sometimes when the most interesting ideas come to the fore. So a lot of times after a brainstorm, I'll try to just go take a walk or do something that's totally different. And there's something about taking your conscious mind off of something that lets new ideas bubble to the top. And sometimes I think that's where my best ideas come, is in that time.
I'd like to address creative tension. How do you work through it when your team isn't coming together or there's disagreement?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. None of our brainstorms have ever ended in a fist fight, but certainly we've come to the table with really different ideas about how to approach a particular creative problem. And my personal view is that tension, as long as it's not personal, is always productive from a creative perspective, and that it's really important to sort of let it air out, let it play out, because to my mind, that always leads to better creative work. It doesn't lead to the creative work that I might have built on my own if I were just living the lonely life of the mind and, you know, coming forth from the mountain with something scribbled on a piece of paper. But that was never really my goal career-wise and never my goal for Story Labs. It's always been more interesting to me to see what comes of the creative collaboration between multiple people and how that can be more than the sum of its parts.
I can see why you're so good at what you do, Steve, and the work you guys create is so amazing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much. This has been great.
Let's take a stat break. Today we have senior editor and podcast member Alma Bauman with a really creative statistic.
Thanks, Kim. So if you're ever stuck at your desk or stuck creatively, like I often get to be sometimes, the easy answer is to just get up and get moving. So in a study by the Journal of Experimental Psychology, 81% of people found that taking a walk really improved their creative output. So it sounds like philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche really kind of had it going when he said, all truly great thoughts are conceived by walking.
That's so interesting. In our main interview section today, when I talked to Steve Weins of Microsoft Story Lab, he mentioned that very thing, that when he gets very stuck, he goes out and takes a walk, and that really hard, you know, creative problem he's trying to solve magically appears to him. So very, very good one. Thank you, Alma.
You're welcome.
Imagination's HQ is in Chicago, which means improv comedy is close to our work home, hearts, and increasingly our process. We're here again with our go-to guy for humor and smarts about creativity, Shad Kunkel, an alum of Second City. Today, we're gonna ask him about do's and don'ts of creative collaboration, and what else, himself. Shad, welcome and let's get started. The theme of today's episode is, how do you successfully lead for creativity? Okay, you have all these creatives, they're running around, worrying about deadlines. One person has to be the leader and provide structure. What do you think are the best ways a leader can bring all these crazy creatives into one cohesive experience that outputs work that is better than if they were to have created it individually?
I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be creative. I think that we use this word undefined, and it puts a lot of pressure on us to be something. I think we're all creative. We're all creative when we wake up in the morning and there's not anything for breakfast and we have to come up with something that we eat. And if it happens to be delicious, we're the most creative people in the world. But when people say be creative, the first thing you do is go into your head and you start listening to your critic. And the critic tells you, oh, that's not good enough. The thing I have come up with today isn't good enough. And that critic gets in the way of actually being creative. So the best thing you can do to lead people down a creative path is to not say, hey, let's be creative. The best thing you can do is create an environment where people just do things and look for creative results.
Shad, that sounds so nice and so lovely, but we all have deadlines and business objectives. We have to prove ROI, yet we want to create a fun playground of creativity where anything goes and it's raining big ideas. What are we supposed to do?
I mean, the first thing I would do is deadlines are meant to be broken. So just lie. That's one way to create more space for yourself. No, I understand that. The pressures to be creative are totally there. I guess you just got to ask yourself, you know, is the goal creativity or is the goal a human need that somebody's asking you for? What do they need from you and how do you address that? If you're being others focused and focused on the other goal, it really frees you up to move to places where you need to be.
So how do you get there? As the leader, you don't want to be 100% hard ass, but great work is very reliant on no. It can't be yes all the time, can it? How do you get teams from no to yes?
Well, here's the thing. The problem is everybody's so quick to say no. Ever since Nancy Reagan, we think it's the only answer to things. Tell them no, we're not going to do that idea. The next idea is that much harder to come up with. 90% of our job is just not panicking. It's the panic. It's the voice inside our heads that says, I need to be creative. This needs to be better than the other thing. Those voices are so loud that we can't actually see what the next natural step is in the progression of being creative. And we have to quiet those voices first and foremost.
Shad, what advice do you have for creative leaders who are trying to tease out great ideas and breakthrough work from their teams?
Well, I think the big thing in creativity is it's not about you. Leaders put a lot of pressure on themselves to come up with all the answers, but it's really just waiting for that moment when they're needed to add direction and allowing those teams to produce what they're going to produce.
What makes a terrible leader in a creative environment?
I think the worst leaders I've ever had were the people that were like focused entirely on themselves. You could tell that they weren't really concerned about your career longevity as much as they were concerned about you not screwing this up for them right now. And anybody who puts that vibe out there makes me want to screw it up for them right now. Because if we put that out there, if that's where your fear is, that's where you will drive people. It's amazing.
So honestly, Shad, in a brainstorm, can you think too hard? Is there any risk we should be worried about here?
Oh, absolutely. If you're overwhelmed by your own thoughts, you need to give yourself brain shelter. Find a place where you can just sit in a corner and cry and say, I'm tired of being creative. Brainstorms, the problem with them is that they just cause headaches. One of the things I like to do with brainstorming is share the responsibility. Because if you get a good brainstorming session, you actually don't have to say anything because they'll think you're part of the group. That's the trick, being creative through association.
And what about prep work? Do you have to prepare for a good brainstorm or can you just go in there and wing it, improv style?
The nice thing about being an improviser is that I don't prepare for anything. The other day I was asked if we wanted to go camping. I said, absolutely, I'm an improviser, I'm ready to go. I went out into the wilderness completely unprepared. So a big part of preparation is about just wearing adequate clothing because you never know what you're gonna come into. At the end of the day, basically, I wish I would have wore a sweatshirt when camping.
Since we're talking about creative leadership, we definitely need to check in with our own creative leader here at Imagination, Jim Myers. Jim's Imagination's founder, president, and CEO. The C stands for creative. Jim, you've been hiring and managing creatives for a long time. What are your own do's and don'ts for managing creatives and getting the best results?
So, Kim, as you know, when I started Imagination 23 years ago, I took the Einstein quote, imagination is more important than knowledge. It's where I got the name of the company. And certainly when you come to the creative process and hiring creative people, you're looking for that imagination. You're looking for that energy, that spark, that something special that they bring to you in their jobs every day. Over time, I've learned that it's really important to look for that in your interviewing process and to then create an environment and a culture where that's encouraged and nurtured and where it's really celebrated as part of your business every day.
So creatives have to come in and be all passionate. There's a fine line between passionate and not delivering and passionate and over-delivering. What's your secret formula for recognizing who's going to be really good?
I don't know that there's really a secret formula, but we continue to refine our interviewing process. We recently, over the last year, have started to require that anyone being hired is brought in and has to present to a small group of people, a small group of executives. And we're really looking for, you know, how do they think? How do they deliver? How might they communicate in front of a client? What if we throw them a curveball? Can they respond? And I think in terms of things that we look for creatives and things that they want from us, they want a certain amount of freedom, not have us not looking over their shoulder every minute and micromanaging them. But I've also found that creatives really want to be included in the process. We found that many times creativity is stifled when people don't get all the information they need to do a great job. And that really means including them from the very beginning as you're developing the strategy and the creative brief so that everyone's on board. And then finally, I've really seen creatives respond to knowing what the results are of campaigns or as of programs. In today's world, they really crave that information to know that something they've worked on and put their blood and sweat and tears into is working, and specifically how it's working and how they can use that information to help them be even better in the future.
When I think about creative leadership, I keep a few questions in mind. We know creativity fails if it's not tied to business goals, and so that's why I always ask myself, is the work we're creating mapping back to the client's business goals or to the audience's goals? If you're trying to show thought leadership, for example, are you putting the right people up front through your content? Challenge your teams to think about why we're doing what we're doing. What are those business goals? Even if the creatives might balk at them sometimes. Also, does a creative solution fit what we know about our audience? Think about it this way. The most beautiful video in the world won't be seen if your target audience doesn't like to watch video, no matter what those numbers say. And a gorgeous print design will not have the right impact if you're reaching people via smartphone. Always make sure to sync back to your goals and make sure you know what your audience really, truly, in their hearts and souls responds to. Last, are you ready to change when you need to? We have more testing tools and data now than ever, so really being able to understand what it means and what we need to change is so important to understanding when it's time to kill our darlings when they're not working. This doesn't mean data is the only way, but a good creative leader figures out when to trust the numbers and when to trust your gut. The two are not mutually exclusive, by the way.
Okay, we've had a lot of good advice today. Let's close our episode with a little brainstorming of our own in the form of our I like, I wish exercise. So I like that the world is rethinking the right approach to brainstorming and coming up with ideas. I do wish that we all made the time in our busy, deadline-driven schedules to really implement any changes that we come up with, because it's really, really important, and sometimes it may just take a little bit longer than doing things the old way.
I really like what Margaret told us about procrastination, that it can be so fruitful and yield such great creative results. I really wish that we had a magic formula that let us know who was the right person who could procrastinate and get to better results versus another. It's hard to know who can pull off brilliance at the last minute, and that knowing the difference would make creative leadership so much easier. Most of all, though, I like that we're talking about this, and I wish everyone would walk away from this episode thinking about concrete ways to better lead for creativity. If you have a really great story or hack, I'd love to hear about it. Email me at kcavanis@imaginepub.com. We'll definitely put that email in the show notes. That's all for today's It Takes Imagination. If you like what you heard today, stay tuned. Further episodes will tackle all things content marketing through the filter of creativity. Subscribe today on iTunes and Google Play, and let us know what you think at podcast@imaginepub.com. Bye, everybody.